And you guys are participating not only in our first ever more than one person on Skype at a time podcast, but this is like some sort of rainbow coalition all across the coast, because we're sitting here in the middle of the country in Des Moines, Iowa, and we've got both coasts represented. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is like nationwide.
So we've got everything covered.
Yeah. Okay, so nobody suck. We're representing the whole contiguous United States on this episode.
Oh, man.
You will be judged on your region.
I don't think I can hold up to that.
Oh yeah, we have a marker board in here. Amanda, do you want to draw a little map and then we can like score points? I guess.
All right, introductions. I'll give you guys 1 point each.
Okay. Hello, you're listening to episode 29 of The Flyover Effect, a podcast about startups, design, and all things internet. I'm Scott Rocketship, your producer and frequent co-host. Also appearing this episode is Amanda Morrow. She's an interactive designer at BitMethod. You can learn more about our company at www.bitmethod.com. We have two guests on this episode, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
So my name's Adam Connor. I'm an experienced design director with Mad Pow based out of Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I actually work out of my home in Western Massachusetts. Been with the company there for about 2 years now. I've been a designer for a little over 10, and I'm also an illustrator.
Thanks, Adam. And here's Aaron.
Yeah, my name is Aaron Irizarry, and I'm an experienced designer with HP, and I work out of the San Diego office. I love design. I love making things and the process of doing that with other people. And similar to Adam, I've been doing design for probably about in this fashion for or some fashion for the, probably about the last 10 or so years, leaning towards some of the more information architecture or user experience related disciplines over the last probably 5 or 6 years. But design is design, and I just love to build stuff.
Thanks, Aaron. So Aaron and Adam were brought to our attention by friend of the show and episode 3 Flyover Effect guest Russ Unger because of the work they've done on a presentation all about critique, which happens to come up quite a bit if you work in design. So we'll get right back to Aaron talking about how the two of them got together and started talking about critique. Enjoy the show.
Critique is something that I was really like diving into, thinking through, trying to unpack what it really is, and seeing different things of like how people were talking about design on Twitter and some of the criticism that was happening there. I just started maybe thinking that it needs to be explored more, and the more I did, I don't know, it was cool to find someone else who was like, I'm doing that too. And so then we just started talking about it, and it's kind of been awesome because we're talking and speaking and hopefully helping create conversation about something that will be really helpful to other designers.
And so far you guys have presented about critique a couple times?
Between the two of us, we have basically one talk, and depending on travel arrangements, Aaron will give it if it's, you know, somewhere out on the West Coast, or I'll give it if it's somewhere out on the East Coast. And if it's sometimes we can travel together, we'll do it together. So I think we're in total, we're probably somewhere 8-10 times, somewhere around there.
So is it nerve-wracking at all giving a presentation about critique, knowing that people are going to be judging you and critiquing your critique presentation?
I think it's nerve-wracking presenting.
Yeah.
Now it's nerve-wracking for them, now that you said that.
Yeah. What is the right answer? No, I'm okay. Unfortunately, I'm not really afraid of being in front of people. And I'm not really that worried about being an idiot. So that's kind of a winning combination. And so presenting it is cool. And the critique thing, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't worry me too much because we did just talk about critique. So if someone came up and critiqued us wrong, like, I don't know.
You'd be like, don't be a dick.
I would hope that we would be welcoming it. You know, I guess we've kind of invited that. What worries me is how I overanalyze how I talk about everything now, though. Like, so if I was to post something on a social network talking about something, I'm like, oh, does that contradict what I say in my presentation? Oh, no. And I got to usually delete it.
Is there a line there, do you think, between, because I wonder about that, too. I'm just big on critique. Like, I've organized events here in Des Moines to try and get people to share their work and talk more about what they're doing. And it's tough. Like, because I guess my head's almost always in that mode. Like, it's what we're doing all day long when we're building product, right? Like, every little decision, everything that goes up on the whiteboard, every mock-up that comes through, critique it, work through it, you know, find the weak points, find the strong points, find what we can cut away. And then I switch over to, like, more casual interactions, like just on Twitter or Facebook or stuff going by. And it's, I don't know, I'm getting better and better, I guess, at biting my tongue and not giving up critiques that weren't asked for, but I also wonder about trying to bring more of that attitude into just everyday conversation.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because one of the main points we make about halfway through our talk is that critique is actually a life skill. It's not a design skill. So it is something that, you know, once you kind of understand what it is and the value of it, why you do it, in what situations you do it, it really can come into play in just any kind of relational interaction. Any kind of conversation where you and whoever you're talking to are in it for the betterment of whatever it is you're doing. That's where critique is really valuable. You know, the 140 character slams that go out whenever a new product gets launched and stuff, that's not something that I think either Aaron and I would consider critique. It's more just it's opinion, it's gut reaction. There's not really an aspect of analysis behind it. So we definitely kind of err on the side of, you know, if you can learn how to do this, if you can get comfortable with it, you can take that element of fear out, and you can take it outside of your design practice, and you can take it into your daily life.
Awesome. I love that. Critique is a life skill. Yeah.
For sure.
And think about it, any of us who's going through whatever we're doing, it's career or our family or relationships, there's a constant moving forward, or else we'll probably find ourselves in trouble. So there's a constant like wanting to improve and to get better. And I think the things that we talk about when we talk about critique, especially in a design setting, and the need for communication and being able to be put your stuff out there, your work out there, and get critiqued and receive it, like that stuff applies to dealing with, you know, interacting with your mentor, or, you know, in a relationship where you have to be able to listen, you've got to be able to hear the tough things sometimes and not have it be all about you. And, you know, so a lot of those things really transcend. And that's why that's one of the things that when we started talking about this, that Adam brought up, that I agreed with and I loved. And I think it definitely takes it past just design and becomes helpful to on multiple levels.
I think sometimes also I find myself relying on critique to solve problems. So if I'm really stuck, I almost need that. And I used to just battle through it and, you know, struggle on my own, but I've actually used it as a tool to move forward. Okay, I'm stuck here. I really just need to get this in front of someone else and I can move forward. And so when you do say life skill, it's like, it's a lifesaver for me, really.
So there's the art of the critique itself, but then just also in pretty much every team and project I've worked on, it's getting comfortable enough with each other and finding enough confidence in yourself just to be able to share your work early and often enough to actually put it up for that critique. And that's what, even as a community, at least here in Des Moines, Iowa, that's some of what I've been advocating for, is just trying to get people to show off stuff earlier. Because it's you know, it can be really... it's pretty much immediately painfully obvious when something quote unquote launches and you know they haven't really had anyone else look at it.
Yeah, and you know, I think what a lot of designers go through, especially on the junior side or someone who's coming into a design field without a, you know, without a decent amount of time spent in a design education, they're coming in and they need to get over this fear of being judged. That's where a lot of the apprehension and critique comes from, is, okay, I'm gonna put this out there and it's going to be judged. And that's not really what critique is about. Critique isn't about judgment, it's about understanding. So when a team can kind of get their head around that and starts looking at, okay, we're looking at this work and we're trying to understand why the designer did what they did, what were the goals they were trying to achieve, and how did they do things to achieve those goals? And then, you know, were they successful or were they not successful? You know, where do we need to do a little bit more work? When you take that aspect of judgment out of it and it's more about analysis and understanding, a lot of that fear can really kind of slip away, especially if the designer can really get into it too. There's no reason that the designer who's pitching their work shouldn't be right there critiquing with everybody else in the room. And that can really break down a lot of barriers.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty forward about stuff that I know just isn't quite up to par. I'll be like, you know, guys, I tried this. It didn't work. Let's figure something out and give me your feedback, your gut reactions, and we can try and solve that problem.
I think one of the things about critique, too, is the idea of removing yourself, right? It's just, and even, I mean, this, there's other ways this works, but like as a designer, like Adam was saying, you remove yourself from this and you critique along with everyone else. you know, one, that starts to take away the element of like me versus you. Well, this is your opinion about what's being made or what's, you know, what's been designed versus my opinion. It's the goal is the product. The goal is the success of the product that's being designed. And so when you remove yourself from that equation, it's a little bit easier to, one, like Adam was saying, you start to break down some walls, you diffuse some of those like stereotypical, it's like, oh, it's me versus the marketing person or this person. And it's more about the product. And I think that if that really helps you to be able to like start to become more comfortable with the process and, you know, and to speak to the showing work early and often, you know, designers tend to want to have those ta-da moments, right? Where like I've been holed away in my office or my cube and I'm just working and working and designing and working all this magic. And then I come into a meeting, and it's like, ta-da, look what I did. And then everyone's like, well, why is that like that? Why is that like that? Why do we do this? Why is that like that? And there's just, and it's like, oh, I poured myself into this for like days or weeks. Yeah. And what happens is as designers, we set ourselves up for that type of like negative experience by not showing our work early enough and getting it out there and starting to actually start the process, giving it thought and time to be refined. And you avoid that a lot quicker. And you can learn a lot more and get better communication on what's being built so that you can be better meeting those needs with the design.
Oh, I completely agree. I think it's huge to just get over putting yourself in someone else's shoes. What does the user want? What are the problems we're trying to solve? If everyone could do that, I think all projects would move forward completely. Like, I think that's the biggest problem is everyone just takes things very personally. They think it's an attack. A designer thinks it's an attack on their skills and things like that. But yeah, I think that's definitely a key point is, you know, step back and, you know, not be biased towards your personal feelings and really focus on what's the best for the product.
A great way to do that is, you know, make sure that you're setting your project off on the right foot by nailing down what those user needs are, what the goals of the product are, and getting everybody to agree to those from the very beginning. Because then in a critique, you can go back to all of that. You can go back and say, you know, we're looking at this from our own eyes, but what about, you know, our user Joey over here? And if you got them pinned up on the wall, their persona, great. You know, how does this achieve, you know, these six goals that we laid out at the very beginning of the project? If everybody starts off on the same page and you continually carry that through any of the collaborative design sessions you might do and any of the critiques you might do, it can really kind of help keep that personal opinion out of the game.
That's really hard, even down to the micro level. Like, that's a place where I often struggle and that I'm trying to train myself better on is in a critique, just arguing from evidence, because it's very easy and it's very instinctual to open my mouth and say, well, I think this because of this, or I don't like the way X is positioned or what it's communicating. And it's a lot, it takes more diligence and a lot more just internal focus to slow yourself down and say, well, because the user is trying to accomplish X, I'm not sure that Y is really solving that problem. Like, that's tough, especially like for our team, at least it's a very, I don't know, we're not too jargony around here, but it's very much like a lean user experience kind of shop. Like, stuff just goes. We have very few deliverables on our projects outside of the product itself. And so it's a lot of just kind of literally sticking things to the wall in an impromptu fashion. Amanda gets stuck. Hey, let's look at this. And trying to turn my brain over into, okay, let's be like, you know, formal critique mode. Let's not just slam opinions all over the place. That's still learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
think before you speak aspect, you know, I think we talk about it. I think it's a bullet point in our talk, like maybe 8 or 9 times, because it's the biggest part of critique. You really have to know what it is you're saying, and you really have to take the time to understand what everybody else is telling you before you react.
So how do you guys discuss this in the terms of working with a client? Because, you know, trying to get a client to also remove their personal opinions and really focus on who they're trying to reach, sometimes I find that to be more difficult than within our team.
So...
So clients, huh?
So clients.
Awkward pause.
Good clients.
No, yeah.
Go ahead with this one, Aaron.
You know, it's really, I think it comes down to communication. I think you can apply some of the same principles as you would in an in-house environment or at the beginning of some of your kickoff situations with a client. that you're going to establish that there's, this is what we're trying to accomplish with this project. This is who we understand that we're designing this for. This is, you know, we're not necessarily designing this for you, depending on what the business is or what you're designing. We're designing this for your customer. We want you to be, you know, this to be a successful product that we're building, whatever it is, a site, an app, whatever. And kind of set that expectation then that as we go through the process, these are the goals and the things that we're going to continue to refer back to, so that when it does come between the client and yourself and it's like, well, here's what we're doing. And the client says, well, I don't really like that. Or my wife really likes the color blue. Or, you know, you never know what you can come across. Yeah. If you have those goals and standards, then, you know, it's helping kind of take care of that for you. And the thing with the clients is, and even with people that we work with, whether they're not designers or maybe they're a marketing manager or all those things that the stigmas and stereotypes we always chuckle about, they're not designers. And so a lot of times when they say the things of make it pop or do this or do that, they're trying to speak a design language that they can't. And so that's the best formulation that they can come up with a lot of the time to try to express what they're saying. And so asking a lot of questions. One thing that we talk about in the presentation is like this laddering, where you kind of take the role of about a 2 or a 3-year-old and you kind of say, okay, so why is that? Why? Why? You think that everything should be blue. And why is that? You know, in what we're trying to accomplish here, what about that do you think making this blue is going to help? You kind of ask questions. And it gets them thinking, and they'll either realize that that's not what I'm trying to communicate, and they may find a way to communicate it better, or they'll realize, Mitch just blue, and I like blue, and that really isn't going to make or break what we're doing here, and they kind of can come to that realization. And in both situations, your client's paying you to work for them, and your employer is also paying you to work for them. And either one of them can, you know, there's going to be a level of say they have, but I think it comes down to just education, asking questions, and doing the best you can just to really communicate that it's what we're doing is for the better of the product. And it's not so much about our personal opinions, because a lot of us like a lot of different things. But how do those relate to the needs and the goals of the product?
We talk about that here sometimes. I don't know, do you guys ever check out the website Clients from Hell?
Yes. Yeah, that's a great one.
It's good for a laugh, but, you know, I think it's what you're just saying. You know, some of those posts on there are kind of like, that's almost more designer from hell. Like, okay, so the client's asking to make something more fun, and that to them, to that designer, that was somehow a big frustration. But it's exactly what you're saying. That's the language they have. That's what they're working with, and that always makes me a little sad with some of those posts. I just think, you know, that you've got a client that's actually interested, that's actually trying to give feedback, that's involved in the process. Like, that's, you know, maybe you should be grateful for that.
Well, and we've tried to differentiate just the critique in the sense of basically telling someone how to do their job and also providing an opinion. So, like, if you don't like something, if something looks off to you, say that, I'm just not quite feeling that. Is there anything we can do? As opposed to, oh, can you move that to the left, like, 2 inches and turn it yellow? Yep. And I think, like, that's where and it is a training process. Like, I've had to train the people that I've worked with, be it BitMethod or any other client. Okay, again, you know, why don't you like this? I think that's a great technique when you're trying to work with someone, to just really get down to the bottom of what's really tripping them off, you know, a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, just like designers have to learn how to critique, if you really want your clients to do it with you, they have to learn it too. So you have to help them learn. And I think the kind of the environment that designers have created working with clients is this one of review, where what clients think they're supposed to do is basically go in and say, you know, do this, do this, do this, and then and then we're good to go on to the next step. And the designer's just sitting there waiting and saying, okay, just tell me I'm done and tell me I can move on to my next project, please. I don't want to do this anymore. And that's not what we're after in critique. So the client has to know we're doing something different, and here's why it's different. And you need to go through the ground rules of critique with them. They need to understand that, you know, it's not about problem solving. It's not about coming up with the solution. It's about analyzing the solution you're looking at, that everybody is at the same level. You know, there should be no expectation that anybody's feedback is more valuable than anybody else's. You know, if you can go through these rules and get them to understand that they're about to do something that's different than what they're used to,
then they'll actively try to do it differently. And when they don't do it differently, when they go back and they're reaching back and they're pulling out their personal opinions again, that's when we start to employ techniques like Aaron said, like laddering, you know, where we can just ask why over and over and over again until we exhaust them. And it's worked. I mean, it's worked very consistently for us. And we've had, I've had clients come back and ask specifically for us to be engaged in critiques, you know, instead of reviews, where they see reviews listed in project timelines, because they start to recognize that there's a difference.
Yeah, I think there's so much benefit in just kind of, our CEO, Dan, talks about kind of taking the client or taking your team on a journey and sharing things along the way, because if you build up all those expectations and then do a big reveal at the end, it could be totally off base. And so he, to my dismay, sometimes he'll share things that I post in Dropbox because it'll pop up on his computer and he might just, you know, send something off to the client like, oh, this is a screen that Amanda just designed. And, you know, the designer in me is like, no, why did you do that? Like, but then at the end, it's just like, oh, the client can kind of see where we're going and go on this journey with us. And it's not a big surprise in the end. And I don't know if that's kind of how you guys approach things, like if you do critiques often and just little bits at a time. I notice that if I simplify something and say, all right, guys, today we're just going to talk about this one screen. The other day I did a sketching exercise with everyone and all we did was focus on one transition that was really going to make or break this app. And we sketched for 15 minutes. We came up with 10 different solutions and then we decided on which one worked. And like, by not having everyone look at the bigger picture and just focus on one thing, I was able to solve a big problem, but in a very simple fashion.
Yeah, at MadPow, we actually, on most of our projects, we employ an activity called Design Studio, where we'll actually bring together the cross-functional team, take a mutually agreed upon set of scenarios, and everybody gets a chance to sketch their solutions, and we'll iterate through each scenario about three times, depending on the time we have. So in doing that, everybody gets a chance to get their ideas out there and everybody gets a chance to have their ideas critiqued and then to iterate on those ideas. And we find that when we do that, we keep everybody on the same page. We can build kind of a shared sense of ownership of the solution. So it takes away that whole idea of, okay, we just went out and we hired a design firm and they're going to come back and they're going to give us a solution. It gives the client an actual sense of involvement in the creation of that solution. And it's been a huge win for us.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful because Amanda is the only person doing straight up visual design on our team. I do copywriting. We have a developer. Dan, our CEO, does business development and focuses on the user experience a lot. But to some degree, we're all doing interaction design. And I think that makes the critiques further down the line when we're actually looking at pretty fully fleshed out mockups, it already feels a lot less personal. It makes me more comfortable. I don't feel like I'm critiquing Amanda because our ideas, our sketches, our designs and interactions that we've worked out in that design studio kind of environment are in there. And it makes it a lot easier.
It makes me look really good.
Well, that another thing too about getting your work out there early is the ability to give people time to think about it. So if you were waiting to that last minute and you get to the review session or the critique session, then most of the information you're going to gather from people is going to be gut reaction, which isn't always well thought out in the context of what's being built. And so if you can get it out there, or if you know you have a session coming up, like get that stuff out there earlier and give people time to think about it and to formulate some thoughts and look at the goals, you know, send it out. Here's also the goals. Give them a chance to think about it some. So when everyone comes together, it's not like a, just like a response session.
Yeah.
It's more of like a thought out building session. We're building something. These are our thoughts based on what we're, you know, we've been seeing. Because a lot of time gut responses aren't really accurate. They're just gut responses.
Or people feel pressured. Like that's what I've observed a lot. And like this just breakdowns, reviews, critiques, whatever that have gone really awry. It has been this sense of this is the only chance I'm going to get to say something on this. Like we are at that review stage. We're looking for the thumbs up or thumbs down. And so there's a lot of kind of heated, well, shit, if I don't say something now, I'm never going to get to say anything about this. And then people are willing to pitch pretty big fights on stuff. And maybe rightfully so at that point, you know, if something is really off and they haven't had a chance to get involved. But I think back, my wife is a painter, and so she went through a fine arts program, and her stories from critiques from those painting classes are just mind-boggling sometimes. And it was really hard to get through to people that would, you know, like that weren't hanging out in the studio environment. Like they would go paint in their dorm room. They didn't show anything to anybody. And then through the whole session, even though people did their best to focus on, you know, the form or the composition or the color balance or whatever, everything would get taken personally because they hadn't been sharing it all through the process. So they felt like every little thing about it was theirs. And that's tough. That's tough to just, I feel bad for those
folks. Definitely remember some very personal critiques where I think people just didn't like me or something.
In college?
Yeah, in college.
Yeah. We all experience that.
See, and it's interesting for me because like my whole background has come from like almost everything I did was live. Like I did theater for a while and then I started doing radio and TV production and it was all live or else live to tape where we didn't really get a chance to fix anything. Like there was all this preparatory work and then it happened and then you were just done. And that creatively is super, super gratifying because, you know, you can ask like, okay, what can we do better next time? And it's a lot easier to have a positive conversation about what can we do better next time instead of what's wrong right now that has to change. So learning about critique and being in the kind of environment that BitMethod runs is, it's been an absolute challenge for me. It's been a really huge challenge figuring that out and understanding like, okay, this is just here. And the only way it's going to get better is if we all work on it and find a way to communicate about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, that aspect of betterment is key. I mean, if you're going out and seeking critique, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, because it's at a certain time slot in your project, you have to realize that the reason you're doing it is to create a better product. It's to improve upon what you currently have. And so the designer needs to understand that. And then the people who are giving the feedback also need to understand that their role is not to judge. Their role is to help improve the product. And to do that, they need to do a thorough analysis of that product right then and there. You know, in whatever state it's in, whether it be wireframes or a visual design screen or a prototype, you know, it's all about improvement. And if everybody's on the same page there, it can take a lot of that personal aspect out of it. It can take, you know, I'm not slamming what you worked on because I don't like you personally. I'm here to help you help make the product better. And if you can really accept that and be genuine about that, it can change the whole tone.
Okay, so critique is a life skill. How do I talk to my wife about
her cooking?
About a recipe that I feel is not completely successful.
Do you have a critique that you'd like to air?
No, Kat, you do. Kat is a wonderful cook. I'm just, should it ever come up, and yeah. I'm sure it won't, but should it ever come up, then maybe advice. Dinner is a little off. What can I do?
Take her to dinner. Just like, you know what? I feel like going out tonight. How about you?
You can take this for lunch tomorrow.
I'm so
all the time. My wife is extremely sensitive about her cooking, and it sucks too because she's a wonderful cook, but she can't understand it. But you know, we talk a lot about the aspect of there being two sides to critique, the giving and the receiving, and the openings have to be right on both sides. So the person getting the critique has to genuinely want it. And that's the problem that my wife and I have when we're discussing things, is that she probably isn't really after critique.
I think I've maybe heard that exact phrase before, actually. I wasn't looking for a critique. I just made your dinner. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. As a designer, unfortunately, like I come home and, oh, there's this. I'm like, well, if we just approached it like this, then I just get the look and I know that it's not time for critique or to design anything. This isn't a workshop. But yeah, I mean, really, intent is huge. The reasoning behind it, why we're asking for it or why we're giving it, that's really where critique's going to live and die. And it just may not be time for critique on recipes. There may be a better time for that. I think like Adam said, she's got to be ready for it. Just the same way that I'm not always ready for critique. Yeah.
That's for sure.
One question I had is, what advice do you guys give for people that are scared of critique? Like, we already talked about fear a little bit, and I think that's a really big step to get over. But getting your stuff out there is a tough hurdle to jump over. And like Scott was saying, this demo event, you should go present this project there, or you should go speak at this other event. And everyone's just like, oh, I don't know. And, you know, like, how do you get over that fear when it comes to critique and getting yourself out there?
I think first, you got to recognize that critique is a skill. It's not a talent that anybody really has. It's something you have to practice. Mm-hmm. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll get. And then second is to just find one person that you feel you have at least a decent, honest relationship with. And do it with them for a while, and then build up and bring in a second person, and then, you know, and keep going and bring in a third person, and just build it up over time, and start to, as long as you're pushing yourself and not just always doing it with the same person every time, push yourself and build up how many people you can do it with and how well you know those people, and eventually you'll break through.
Well, I know you didn't ask me, Amanda, but my advice would, what's helpful for me is making sure that you've taken the step of being your own harshest critic first.
Yeah.
I think that's something that you'll see a lot, is that people are presenting something that they maybe don't feel super confident about, not necessarily because it's not good, but because they haven't really deliberately put on an editor's hat, sat down and worked through it. I know that's a really big thing in writing. Like, I cringe at people looking at writing that I haven't edited, because I feel like it's two different jobs. Like, okay, I wrote it, I haven't edited it yet. So it's really literally in my mind not ready for someone to look at.
Yeah.
Because I haven't finished the task. So just taking that time to go through it yourself, just Google how to critique whatever you're trying to critique.
Yeah.
Run through those seven, run through seven questions on your own, writing it down, so it's not just in your head, actually writing that down. What do I like about this? What do I not like about this? How, is it effective in this scenario? That's what I notice keeps people away from doing critique with others, is they haven't really done it themselves yet.
I think showing unfinished work is huge for me, because then I haven't built up all this anxiety. because the more I work on something, I'm like, God, I hope I'm doing this right. I hope this is down the right path. But by showing something unfinished, like last night, I posted a screenshot of something I worked on just for a few hours. And I was like, here's my first stab, guys. And everyone was like, all right, that looks awesome. So then now I have this confidence to build up, to keep moving forward. And I don't feel like, mm-hmm, I've invested so much energy and, fret basically into something later on, that ends up being wrong.
Is there anything, mm-hmm, coming up that people should know about?
Not at the moment, no. We've we've got some stuff in the works that we can't talk about just yet.
Oh, boo, but, boo.
Yeah. Everybody's got their little state secrets.
Yeah, but nothing really planned. We're taking a quiet, quiet holiday season here, and we'll be gearing up and making appearances, probably starting again next spring.
Awesome. Well, cool. Yeah. Adam, Aaron, thank you so much for being on the Flyover Effect. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Good times.